I mean, it's an enlightenment and an awakening that we're connected. We're connected to the universe, and we're connected to the earth, and we're connected to each other so much more intimately than we could ever imagine. And I think that that message is so important to share with people, that we're not alone. We're not alone. And as far as other data, after I came forward with the book, I was approached by filmmakers. And certainly coming from a video and workbook background, I wanted to do a video. But I had no time. I was working 7 to 7 at the Arizona Heart Institute, doing radio programs like this into the night, getting a couple hours sleep, and then doing Barnes & Noble and Borders book tour on the weekend. And actually a couple had, parents had seen me at one of the, Barnes & Noble presentations and arranged, surprisingly enough, for me to present the data at a middle school here, a very prestigious middle school. And I was blown away that they could even get that together, because I know how controversial the topic is. But here I walk in the last period of the day, 200 middle school students. You could hear a pin drop. They thirst for this knowledge. And not only that, but I realized for the first time that there is nothing, and I mean zero, nada, in our history books about this topic. And I was approached by filmmakers, one of which, Steve Lance, who was very, very persistent. His parents live here, and he said, I'm coming to see my parents, and I'm bringing the equipment, and we're starting the film in May. And I said, whoa, I said, I don't have time for this. I would love to do it. Plus, I stayed anonymous for 7 years. I don't know if people that had emailed me, witnesses that had emailed me in confidence would come forward, the professors that I worked with at the universities, if they would get involved with this, it's so controversial. Every single person I asked, except one who came on board later, wholeheartedly wanted to do it. And I thought, whoa, this is a sign. I've got to do this, right? So we started production. And by June, by the end of June, it was so overwhelming that I had to make a choice. And it wasn't an easy one, because I loved the job and it was a wonderful, wonderful job. But here I was in the trenches, really, you know, I mean, getting such incredible, information. Anybody that's seen the documentary, I hope appreciates what we're trying to impart, because I tried to cover the whole gamut of the topic in a very gentle way, just as these phenomena are touching people in a very gentle, non-threatening way, one person at a time. I hope that, you know, my book and the documentary do the same, but I had to make a choice, and finally decided to leave the job and to just go full force in finishing the documentary. The first premiere was at the Harkins Scottsdale Theater, and we're having our anniversary, 15th anniversary there as well, March 11th. But we had the premiere there in 2005, and I haven't looked back. We've won over a dozen international film festival awards, which is unheard of. I mean, not only for a documentary, but certainly one of the genre. And it keeps evolving with new sightings, with new witnesses coming forward. In fact, interestingly, right after the 10th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights event, our former Governor Symington, who had mocked the sighting in 97, came forward to say that he actually saw it.
Yeah, how do you explain that?
Well, you explain it to me. It's interesting. Well, you know, look, I don't know. I mean, I have to say that initially, and I know the atmosphere at the time in 97 was not the kindest for anyone that came forward. Like I said, the former councilwoman, and she was vice mayor at the time, Frances Barwood, really got blasted. And many of the witnesses that came forward just were nailed to the wall, and there was a lot of criticism and ridicule and laughing and that kind of a thing. Interestingly, too, call it a coincidence, is that in the early 80s, I had done news reporting, health news reporting for NBC in Philadelphia with Jessica Savage, if you remember that name.
Yes.
And
I've been following your career from early on.
You're
quite the TV personality.
Okay.
At one time.
And, well, I'm just trying to help. just trying to get the information out there in a credible way, and started doing health reporting when we came here to Phoenix at NBC here, and then USA Cable. And any rate, so you know, when you look at the whole picture, and it's funny because the people that I had started working with in the early '80s were just getting started too. A lot of them were underlings at the NBC affiliate here. When I came forward in 2004, you know, they had come a long way. Many of them were the news director or the head of production in another one of the studios. So when I came forward as Dr. X, and I have to tell you, Jim Del Toso and Michael Tanner, the two chief investigators at Village Labs, gave me that name, because I really stayed anonymous. I mean, I let my pictures out there. I let the data out there to speak for itself. I wanted to share it so that people could see what we saw here, but I didn't want anything to do with this. I mean, this isn't about me. It's about the data. And when I did come forward finally, it was amazing because now these people that I had gotten friendly with in the early 80s were heads of the departments at different stations, and they said, "You're Dr. X. Well, come on over." And they have been so kind and so open. And the ridicule and the snickering aren't there. I mean, it's really a model for how the media should react. Just like in Belgium. I mean, Belgium is also a model for what should happen when there's unexplained aerial phenomena sightings. I mean, they joined forces in the 90s with the military and civilians and the university and really tried to find out what was going on. That's what should happen when we have these sightings. And, you know, as far as the governor, I have to tell you, I mean, a lot happened in between 97 and 10 years later,
yeah,
including my coming forward. And, you know, I hope, you know, a little bit of my coming forward and people seeing that, you know, if you stand your ground and you have the data and you do your homework, and that's all I ask. All I ask is that people just look at it and then they can make up their own mind. I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything. It's the data is there if people care to look at it. And, you know, maybe he felt that it was time, you know, because things had changed in 10 years.
Well, he used the old, I wanted to avert the panic story.
Well, there wasn't panic. That's the thing. There really wasn't panic.
Well, sometimes, you know, you've been in the media. Sometimes public officials see things that aren't there, especially religion and things like that.
It was curiosity more than anything else.
Yeah, but, right.
You know, if that was his perception, you know, and like I said, at the
time... Well, I'm not buying that, but I mean, I'm just telling you what he said.
Yeah, well, and, you know, and I have to say that, you know, I'm glad that he did come forward. I mean, if my efforts helped him and others to feel brave enough to come forward and share their own stories, well, good for him. It certainly helped move the ability of the sighting forward, and for that, I really appreciate that, because to have an elected official divulge that he saw something that, in his estimation as a pilot and past military, was not of our world is a giant step forward, I think.
And we're almost out of time. I want to run down what's happening in March, April, or May with you.
Well, the other thing I'm doing, you asked me what other things I'm doing, I'm going back to my passion of youth education, and now that the book and the documentary have kind of gotten a life of their own, I am certainly speaking and worldwide on the topic. I'm going with the flow and wherever it leads me, just trying to help. But I'm also working on a curriculum, a comprehensive curriculum called Out of the Box, that will address unexplained phenomena. And we're talking in a very, again, a very gentle overview of the topic, addressing crop circles and introducing crop circles in mathematics as well as art, the history timeline, working with some wonderful people, Richard Dolan and Dr. Bruce Maccabee, with the history of this topic, which is extensive, as well as the science. We have a classroom now where we have a pilot program where half the class is building a space station and half the class is building an underwater station, with the question, you know, what if we can't survive here anymore on Earth? What would we do? How would we survive? And also bringing up the questions in English class, what if we're not alone in the universe? how would that change our worldview? How would that change our world? What would we tell them about us? I mean, so many different issues just to introduce this topic, because again, kids thirst for this knowledge. They want to know about this. I mean, they're watching all the shows on cable, Ancient Aliens and UFO Hunters and all that. I mean, they're watching this stuff, and they are really curious, and they want to know more. And certainly the more credible information we can give them, the better. And that's what I'm trying to do. So we have a pilot program working with wonderful teachers, working with an ASU senior math professor on the crop circles and so forth, to really get something credible and wonderful into the classroom for 5th to 12th grade. And that's what I'm working on now. I have an event coming up on March 11th, which is the 15th anniversary of the mass sighting celebration at the Scottsdale Harkin Shea Theater at 1 p.m. on Sunday, March 11th. And it's been sold out ever since the premiere in 2005. So, you know, if this is timely, I hope that people get their tickets early through the Harkins Movie Theater. It's a wonderful, wonderful event. I mean, not only do we screen the documentary, and I have to say, people walk in as strangers, but leave connected. There is something that happens within those few hours that we're there, because we show the documentary, then we have we introduce the cast members that are there, and this year Francis Barwood and a number of other wonderful cast members will be there, and we'll also be doing a little presentation, and Steve Lance, my collaborator on the film, will be in town to host the Q&A, and I'll be doing a little presentation as well and a book signing. So it's a really amazing event, and we usually have standing room only. People try to push their way into standing in the back. And it's great fun. So I hope.
And tickets are still available?
Tickets are still available, and also, again, call, you know, to give the theater a call or go online for Harkins Theater. And I'm also speaking at a very unique conference. Paula Harris has organized the first annual 2012 Women's Symposium in Glen Rose, Texas.
Yeah, I had to look that up and see where Glen Rose was. It's it's just south of Fort Worth.
Yeah, it should be really, really interesting. There's men there, too, and there's going to be witnesses from the Stephenville, Texas sighting, which is very similar, by the way, to the Phoenix lights, and I'll be addressing that at that conference, that we'll be doing a panel. So there'll be men and women, but as far as the presenters, we have Carol Rosin, and we have Angelina Joyner, who was the journalist that actually broke the story for the Phoenix, for the Stephenville sighting, as well as Paula Harris and a number of other wonderful speakers. So it should be really fun, and that's May the 19th and 20th in Texas. And if you look on StarWorksUSA.com, it's listed there, or go to my website, the Phoenix Lights Network, and go to the events page, and we have a link there, and to other events that are coming up as well.
We're going to have to end it here, but there's lots of questions that need to be asked, and I'm sure you're still investigating, and you still have lots of answers that I haven't gotten around to.
Like I said, it was a 750-page journal, and a lot more has come out in the last 15 years.
Yeah, so, right.
You know, I urge people to just, you know, take a look at the book, The Phoenix Lights, The Skeptics Discovery That We Are Not Alone. I also have and the documentary, The Phoenix Lights, We Are Not Alone documentary. And the bonus features, by the way, are wonderful. We have Dr. Edgar Mitchell, astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell, is in the documentary, and he is just amazing. I mean, he, by the way, was being conferred with during the mass sighting, and he talks about that and also about the cover-up, the government cover-up in the bonus features, also the coincidences, which we never even got to. There are some really bizarre coincidences that happened on March 13th, including a satellite that is supposed to detect incoming missiles went dead that night. It was built out in Chandler here, and we got the word that it went dead that night. Plus, there was an article in the July issue of Scientific America that there were strange gamma rays coming into our atmosphere on March 13th. Didn't mention the Phoenix Lights, of course, but it's there nonetheless. And also, you know, I got the word that We went to DEF CON 3. I don't know if that's true. It's, you know, certainly speculation, but those are the coincidences that were brought up by some of the investigators here. So there's a lot more to this story. So I really hope people do pick up the book and get in contact with me if they like. And I also have a page on Facebook, Phoenix Lights Network page, and I post a lot of interesting information there as well. People want to join us there.
When I started covering this story originally, I figured it was an extraterrestrial period. Now, I don't know, especially after listening to you and reading your stuff and watching your videos, there must be more to it.
Yeah, I mean, I have to tell you, Jerry, I don't know what they are. I just know that they are. I mean, we can speculate that they're spirit world, as the native cultures think, that they're time travelers, that they're interstellar, interdimensional, or all of the above. I mean, we know that...
I'm inclined to think a lot of these things are always ending up being all of the above or most of the above.
Right, right. Well, the universe is probably teeming with life when you really look at the data. I mean, our one galaxy, and we know now that there are billions of galaxies out there, you know, with the Hubble and the Kepler now, that might have trillions of planets, and a certain percentage livable. And certainly we know that the ingredients for life are out there, amino acids and so forth. So, you know, when you look at our one Milky Way galaxy, it's about 14 to 16 billion years old. Our one solar system is 4 to 6 billion years old. There could actually be sentient, intelligent beings out there billions of years ahead of us. Billions of years ahead of us. So, you know, when you take that in consideration and, you know, how they may have found a way to be here while we're talking right now and we don't see them unless, again, we're open to them or get glimpses of them. But I think we're getting to that point, Jerry, and I hope we are.
The thing that bothers me about it, I'm inclined to agree with you on all of this about the hidden meanings, the spiritual world or whatever, the other dimensional aspects, time traveling and all of that. But why would the government be so obfuscational in not telling the truth about any of this stuff? They must know something.
Well, that's a really good question, Jerry. And I no longer even ask it anymore because
I understand.
That's, you know, they have a job to do too. There must be a reason. Certainly, other countries are much more open to these phenomena as being.
I think it's outmoded thinking on the part of our politicians.
Well, I think they know.
What it is the same thing that Fife Symington said. He probably believed it. Maybe giving the benefit of the doubt, it would cause panic. And we hear that about UFOs all the time. Well, we can't. That's going to upset all religions.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is BS. Everybody would be adapting and changing their narrative to all of the religions of the world within 2 weeks.
You make a really, really good point. And, you know, J. Allen Hynek, who was plucked from the head of the astronomy department at Northwestern to head Project Blue Book, which we know is the only, public study of UFOs, and that where most things were brushed under the carpet that were actually real, and they let out the things that weren't, that could be easily explained. Right before he passed, not only did he share that he was told to put a lid on any kind of panic, which is understandable at the time with the Cold War and all that, but he also said very poignantly that science happens in threes. The first stage is complete disbelief. The second stage is, well, it might be so. And the third and final stage is, I knew it all the time. And I think we're getting closer and closer to that final stage. I think we've been really fed enough mis- and disinformation for decades that, you know, now that we have seen, I mean, now with technology, certainly the internet and social networking gets sightings out there at a heartbeat. I mean, I have people on my Facebook page reporting sightings as they're happening, which is phenomenal. We have cell phones now, which we didn't in 97, by the way. I mean, very few people had cell phones, and they were big. They didn't have cameras. But now we have cameras and cell phones, so people can actually capture these phenomena, and most can be explained. Most can be explained. But and that's why you have to be discerning and prudent when there are sightings, and certainly there's, you know, so much hoaxing going on the Internet, too, which is another side of this, which is unpleasant. But the bottom line is that more and more people are being touched by these things one person at a time. They're seeing things that are real to them, that are unexplainable. They cannot be denied any longer. And I think that, you know, this is really going to come from the people. I mean, as far as, you know, it's wonderful that there are others out there trying to get the government and military to come forward with information. But on the other side, and I really feel personally that that's my part in this, is to help people learn and to grow and to be prepared. Because who's preparing the public? Really, jury. Who's preparing the public? And that's one of the reasons I'm doing the curriculum, is because, you know, perhaps we won't see it in our lifetime, but certainly the next generation is going to see more and more of these phenomena, because they're increasing and they can't be brushed off any longer. So it's time we do prepare the population. And I agree with you. I mean, there are some people that are going to freak out. There's no doubt about it. But I think the vast amount of people worldwide now, because we have become so small with social networking and so forth, are quite aware that something's going on. Something's going on. And that there's an intelligence, beyond our own that's visiting us and it's here. And, you know, again, it's a choice. We have free will, and it's a choice of people whether to open up to that and learn about it, because the more you learn about it, the more you feel comfortable and the less you fear. And, you know, I think that's what this is about, too, that we need to get past that and to move forward and to address it address the reality in a credible and realistic way.
I think that's a good way to leave the show.
All righty then. Hey, Jerry, thank you so much for letting me share. I know we went over a lot of things, and it is confusing. I mean, it isn't an easy topic, but when you look at how the Phoenix Lights event transformed and really look at the puzzle pieces and the reality of really what happened here that affected thousands and thousands of people at such a deep level, and it's still affecting people at a very deep level, and it's affecting people worldwide. In fact, when I came forward in 2004, I'll leave you with this, Jerry, the official and accepted explanation of the Phoenix Lights, because that was all that was out there, and anybody not here locally didn't know the rest of the story, was that the Phoenix Lights were merely military illumination flares. And that's what was accepted. And you can only imagine the angst and the frustration for someone like myself that knew that there was so much more to this story that needed to be heard. And I'm so glad that it is being heard and that people are embracing the data and just looking at it. I mean, it's data. It's information. It's important tidbits that can really give the picture of something real and wondrous, and the possibilities are wondrous. And now when similar sightings are occurring worldwide, they compare them to the Phoenix Lights, and that's really cool.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lim. We'll talk to you later.
Talk to you soon. Thanks so much, too.
We'll have to do this more often.